Hello, lovelies, and happy new year. At least it feels that way. I have to say I feel more encouraged than I have for a very long time, and I don't know why, but I do get these feelings in my bones, and I can tell you a few things. The first thing is, thank goodness I am doing the Women of Wisdom Conference this year. It is a celebration of the immaterial, and it could not come at a better time, and I'm going to explain to you why that is in just a minute. Second of all, very exciting, and I'm going to go with tropical on this. Because I feel like we've been in a very Saturn in Aquarius vibe. But apparently in March, Saturn is moving into Pisces, which is really ironic because I just posted that whole imaginal realm thing with the fabulous Becca. And what this means is that we're moving into a really imaginal stage again. And I was listening to the amazing Gordon White and Austin Popick, I think his name is. Anyway, they did a prediction for 23, and they were talking about how all the great imaginal literature was written during this Saturn in Pisces stage. So you had The Lord of the Rings, you've had even the Game of Thrones, and a bunch of other stuff. So I'll put that in the notes for you so that you can go ahead and watch that. But it is encouraging, right? You know, they say a lot of great culture gets born during this time. I think it's fortuitous that right now, with the events that have just happened, that we are going into a period that is going to allow more people, more access to the realms beyond the material. So, despite what I'm going to tell you next, it's very kind of encouraging, I think. But I'm going to take you back now in time to my very second podcast. There is no history, and it was kind of a weird place to go in my second podcast of all podcasts, because I was talking about the fact that the materialistic paradigm is the best place for a non-material enemy of humanity to exist, because we are basically persuaded and taught and pushed away from any investigation of things that are immaterial within this paradigm. And possibly this paradigm has been set up to be material for that very reason. And so that's basically what I talked about in the episode 2. Rudolf Steiner's work on this, Rudolf Steiner's predictions on this. And then I did another one, I think it was called Blood Demon, where I got into it even a little bit more. And up until this point, I had been relying solely on Rudolf Steiner's work in this regard, as he really was the only researcher that I had been acquainted with, that I had come across anyway, right, that had looked into this question. So, one of my anthroposophist friends had sent me an article written on a book called The Spiritual Consequences of the COVID Vaccination, and it seemed really, really interesting to me. And so I went ahead and bought the book, and I was kind of floored. I was really impressed because one of the things that Thomas actually does is he goes through the esoteric anatomy of the human being. Now, that's really, really something that is quite cool. And I have another book by a researcher who's no longer with us, who went into the Egyptian definition of the different bodies that humans have. So the Egyptians were well aware of this. They had identified and named the various non-material levels of the human body, or human complex might be a better term for it. So Thomas Mayer calls them, I love how he says spiritual, but spiritual members of the human body. And he goes into that and explains it. So I'm going to spend just a minute going over that part of the story, because I think that it's really interesting for us all to know that we have an esoteric anatomy. And honestly, when we get into this esoteric anatomy business, this is what Chance is talking about when he is looking in season 2 and season 3 about the impact of Kundalini activation and how these spiritual bodies have their own organs of perception that come online with the agitation or the energy or the activation from a Kundalini experience. And so the ancient Egyptians again pointed to that, as we show very clearly in the series. But in one respect, I really like how pragmatic Thomas Mayer has been in outlining these spiritual members of our body. So we're going to have a little tiny bit of an anatomy lesson today. And if you think about all of that incredible craziness that Ingo Swann talks about, that he was able to clairvoyantly see when people were aroused, when you understand that you have so many other non-physical organs, if you want to call them, or parts of yourself. I don't know. What is your arm? Is your arm a member? Is it a body part? Like, what is it? I don't even know. We'll just call them super sensible members, right? Then it starts to make sense that Ingo could see all of these different parts of the energetic body. So the first part of the body that Thomas addresses is the material body. And we all know that, don't we, darling? It is the thing that we can see and feel and touch. But what we might not know is that Thomas says that the material body is only a very small part of the whole human being. He says if someone were to just look at someone's cut fingernails, we would say that from such a narrow perspective that they could not understand that person. So it really is, in his perspective, the same way when we just look at the material body. The material body, however, is permeated by the other members of the human being. But this conflation is usually not differentiated. For example, he says, when we experience the material body as being alive, this is actually a perception of the etheric body, not the material body itself. So that's really interesting. The next level of our supersensible body is the physical body, or the phantom body, or the form body. Now, this is the spiritual working archetype, the blueprint of the material body. Before an incarnation, this is created out of the cosmic spirit man and holds the form of the material body. Since you might get the physical body and the material body confused, it's better to call it the phantom body. So even Rupert Sheldrake was just talking about the phantom body, and people might know or have heard of the phantom body. It's that thing that when you get your leg cut off, you still get itchy toes, right? Or you cut your hand off and you can still get pain in your fingers. So that is the phantom body. It can be perceived supersensibly some inches around the material body. And what Thomas says is the perception of the phantom body is actually more difficult than the etheric body. It requires more practice. In fact, this is a really good time to get into this. Going back to Ingo, when we're talking about Ingo being able to observe all of these crazy regalia, as he called it, in the aroused human, Ingo was utilizing the powers of clairvoyance. So let's go back again. When you have energy going through these levels of the body and you activate these supersensible organs of perception, such as the organ that allows for clairvoyance, you are able to see the crazy things that Ingo saw. But in addition to being able to see the crazy things that Ingo saw, you are able to perceive these supersensible members of the body, right? And so basically Thomas Mayer and his team of approximately 50 other clairvoyants, who were theosophists and anthroposophists, but these people had worked on developing their organs of perception in order to be able to perceive things beyond the material. And so this is where this information is coming from, okay? That having worked on, practiced, and developed these abilities, they are able to ascertain information from their organs of perception that we might miss quite simply because we haven't developed our organs of perception. I like to use the analogy of the guitar. Every human that has fingers and ears has the ability to play the guitar. Now, some of us, like Chance, have an inborn or a past life memory, and so have the ability to pick up a guitar and with practice become a guitar genius. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody's going to be able to do that, but it means that some people have this inborn skill to be able to play guitar, like Chance, and that's kind of like the Ingo Swan. Chance is like the Ingo Swan of guitar. Ingo had this inborn ability that was very, very special that enabled him very easily to work with his organs of perception to bring them online. Chance has this inborn ability to play guitar, but it doesn't mean that everybody can't play guitar. It just means that it might take us a little bit longer and a lot more practice to be able to become competent at playing the guitar. But everybody has these abilities. So we need to make that clear. Everybody has these abilities. Some people have more talent than others, but everybody with the right practices can bring these abilities online. So Thomas and his team of people that had developed their supersensible organs of perception came together and did research to write this book. So let's get back to looking at the etheric body that is more easily perceived than the phantom body. So the etheric body, also called the life body or the body of formative forces, calls dead matter to life and creates a living organism out of many individual elements. The etheric body forms the basis of all life. The term ether is comparable to prana in India or chi in ancient China. All living beings besides humans, including animals and plants, have their own etheric body. If one pursues the question in meditation of what the difference between minerals and plants is, one can gain an understanding and experience of the etheric body. The etheric body forms the organs of the body according to the archetype of the phantom body. It is also the bearer of memories, temperaments, and habits. We normally become aware of thoughts when they are given a form in the etheric body. Ideas, conceptions are usually visible in the area of the etheric body, in the front of the head. The etheric body always mixes with the environment, and so several etheric bodies can be permanently connected. A family or life community normally forms a common etheric body. The etheric body is the densest part of the human aura. Now, the next level is the astral body. The astral body is the body that constitutes our experience and our emotions. You could call it the body of experience. If we meditate on the difference between plants and animals, we come to understand the astral body. It is the basic carrier of consciousness, but not of self-consciousness that only arises through the eye. Feelings such as pleasure and displeasure, sympathy and antipathy, are experienced through the astral body. It enables independent movement of the body and sense perception. Everything that we think, as well as the conscious part of our will, intentions, are also experienced in the astral body. When experiences of the astral body are impressed on the etheric body, the sentient body arises. Okay, the next level is called the eye. Rudolf Steiner describes this very beautifully as the veiled sanctuary of the soul. The eye forms part of the eternal spiritual core of the human being and is at the same time individual and universal. In its depth, the eye is not easy to understand. The eye penetrates the other members of the human being and transforms them. This is also known as the ego eye organization. The eye is the captain of the ship of the other members of the human being. Through the work of the eye in the astral body, the sentient soul and the intellectual and mind soul arise. The next member of the body is the sentient soul. The sentient soul is part of the human soul and not only conveys all perceptions and sense impressions, but it is also the seat of all instincts, desires, passions, and will impulses with which the I is connected. In the sentient soul, however, the I has barely awakened. Instead, the I identifies with feelings, thoughts, and perceptual contexts, which can lead to I entanglements, which is the ego. The ego is the lower eye, hardened in egoism, which manifests as a distorted echo of the authentic eye. I think we can all relate to that one. The next level is the intellectual soul, also called mind soul or rational soul. This lives in the interplay of intellect and mind. The latter in the sense of, do you mind? Do you mind? Pure understanding makes the soul life sober, unfeeling, and impotent. The intellectual soul is completely filled with what it thinks or perceives and is lost in it, as it were. The term mental body largely corresponds to the intellectual soul. On the other hand, the mind gives the soul warmth and energy. In the mind, emotions and will impulses are so linked together in a healthy unity that, unlike the exuberant, blind emotions of the sentient soul, they do not rob the eye of control over the life of the soul. The intellectual and mind soul is the currently prevailing state of consciousness of mankind. The eye is definitely working within it, but without it becoming clearly conscious of itself. This only happens in the consciousness soul. Now, the consciousness soul is the next level, and here the soul grasps itself in its own being, in its eye. Rudolf Steiner says very beautifully, "Therefore, this I cannot be perceived by the consciousness soul in any other way than through a certain inner activity. The consciousness soul does not live in thought and world contents, but in an intensification of the active soul forces. All contemporary meditation should first have the goal of developing the consciousness soul. This is the most autonomous member of the soul that has separated itself most from the rest of the world. The sovereignty of the individual, but also the sobriety and objectivity of the observations of nature, are fruits of the consciousness soul. It can open itself equally to the sense world and the spiritual world. It is the soul member that can influence human actions through impulses of the beautiful, the good, and the true emanating from the spiritual world. The consciousness soul corresponds to the integral consciousness described by Jean Gebser and Ken Wilber. Okay, so there's a few more. What I think I might do, my lovelies, is turn this into a two-parter, because I think just getting through the spiritual anatomy is going to take us so long before we get to the more interesting part. So let me finish off this bit, and then we'll come back in a few days. We'll get into the challenging bit, shall we? So the next part is the spirit self. Every supersensible experience takes place in the spirit self. It is sense-free consciousness, the higher self. It is also the angelic level of consciousness, life spirit. The spiritual world and its beings are actively weaving life. We connect to this world with our life spirit. This can also be understood as the etheric body permeated by the eye. The next level is the spirit human. This is, for the present time, the highest self, the cosmic human being who can become infinitely large, a star figure. The individual phantom body is formed from the eternal spirit human before each incarnation, which then forms the material body. Many individual spiritual beings form part of the higher members of the human being, who constantly accompany and work on with their human being. I am going to present three important categories of such beings here. Now, the first one is the angel. And since reading this book, I have been working with my angel, and I swear to God that I have been asking my angel for help with little tiny things, right? Giving up things that no longer serve me, that are not necessarily the most pleasant things to do. And so I'm just saying, hey, angel, help me, right? And I swear I feel these beautiful wings wrap around me and this sense of calm come over me. So, wow, you know, what's real? Is it helping? Yes. Is it beautiful? Yes. So I'm loving the angel thing right now. And Thomas says that the angel accompanies the human being with angelic patience through incarnations. Our angel always carries an overview of our karmic connections and necessities. They are more highly developed than we humans and affect us from the sphere of the spirit itself. Every supersensible experience is conveyed through the angel. Every night we sleep, the angel protects us on our journeys. And after death, the angel guides us through the higher spiritual realms of the angelic hierarchies, also called the planetary spheres. The spiritual light of Christ reaches us through the angel. The feeling of being at one with yourself, of loving yourself and others, means being permeated by the angel. Now that really, when Thomas said that, he actually said that in the interview, it made me mist up, because my God, I'm finally kind of happy with myself. Kind of finally at 57, loving myself. And I'm loving people, right? Look, it might be because I'm in Thailand. Jez is so funny. He's like, people love you here, Vanessa. People love you. It has to be because of your big boobs. And what I'm trying to say is that these people are so full of love, and it's like this goddamn spark that happens with these people. They're so open to it, right? They're so open. So my little flame meets their little flame, and we make a little firework, right, when we meet. And it's absolutely beautiful. And I don't know, like, you get that, right? There are these people that you meet in life in America and Australia and Italy or wherever the hell, and that happens, right? And it's like such a special moment. But this happens so much in Thailand. It's crazy. But the point is that it's a beautiful thing to hear that my angel and I must have a nice connection. So that's really, really lovely. And he also goes on to say that when the connection with the angel is disturbed, a person feels removed from himself. Okay, and so if you have low self-esteem, for example, then that means that your connection with the angel is not at high fidelity, right? And so how easy is that then to fix, for goodness sakes? I mean, well, just, you know, start talking to your angel. And now that we have this imaginal thing happening in March, right, where imagination and the imaginal start coming together, this is going to be fabulous because we can start fixing some of these problems utilizing our imagination. Now, so remember I was telling you about the wings, okay? So the angel is usually directly behind the person. So my lived experience is that the angel, the wings come from behind me and wrap around the front of me. And so even that kind of validates that feeling that I have, validates this experience I have with the angel. So yes, loving it. All right, now the body elemental. The body elemental being is the angel's co-worker on the level of the etheric body. It is the consciousness of our body and takes care of all organs and life processes, even across incarnations. Viewed aurically, the body elemental is usually in front of or inside the human being. Now, in the interview, Thomas says that this body elemental is kind of like the body doctor. Now, this is hugely important because I don't know if you can trust doctors anymore. I don't know. I can't trust doctors anymore. At least I take it all with a huge grain of salt and I do my own research and I go with my instinct, and it's just the days of blindly trusting a doctor are gone. So what Thomas is saying is that this little body elemental being, you can ask it and say, okay, what do I need to do to fix my blank, blank, blank problem? And the body elemental being will tell you what is required for healing. So it's like your own little internal doctor or readout device or whatever you want to call it. I don't know. It's amazing. So when there's a problem in the human body, you go inside and you talk to the body elemental being and boom, you get the answer you need. So I think that is fantastic. Now, one thing that Thomas did say is that one of the hardest jobs in bringing on these super sensible organs is to distinguish the difference between the information, for example, that the body elemental being is actually giving you with the imagination or the ego or the information that you want the body elemental being to give you, okay? There is a discernment that needs to be learned when doing these practices to be able to get accurate information or define the accuracy of the information that you're getting from, for example, this body elemental being. And that comes through practice. This discernment is something that can be learned. Because I know that there is a voice inside of my head that says, yeah, that chocolate cake, that'll make you feel better. And I don't think that's my body elemental being saying that. So this is where discernment comes in. But it's all possible, people. It's all possible. Now, the last bit of the body that Thomas outlines in the book is the doppelganger. Now, the question that I had about this is that I had gone directly to Rudolf Steiner's definition of the doppelganger, and that is basically what I was covering in episode 2 of the podcast. And so Thomas's definition of the doppelganger is slightly different from that. Thomas describes the doppelganger as the unredeemed state. It comprises the totality of human spiritual shadows, unredeemed feelings and traumas of all human supersensible members, antisocial, egoistic behavior patterns, and all old, not yet integrated karma. Orically, the double usually walks beside the person. However, in uncontrolled situation, the double takes the lead and suppresses the I. The person then behaves in a surprisingly aggressive or destructive manner. Now, I do love the idea of the fact that there is a shadow body. And I love that because we can work on that. We can work with that to heal ourselves from all of these things. Rudolf Steiner describes a doppelganger more as an alien entity that enters into this complex and also can take over the eye and control the behavior. So my supersensible organs of perception are not at the point yet that I can come in and say, oops, I know exactly which one it is, or if it's a combination, or if there is, in fact, a combination that there is a shadow body and there is a doppelganger body. So we're just going to leave that on the table until we get a little bit more developed and we can report back with our own experience on what that is. But either way, it is, let's just call it the area that requires some attention. There we go. Okay, so as I said, this is getting way long. So next, we will go into the portion of the book where he starts talking about the spiritual consequences of things that we do to ourselves. And it's not just the medicine du jour. And I guess we're just going to have to wait and explain why this conference thing is so important. But I hope that you enjoyed this esoteric anatomy lesson. Oh, and also, because it's a new year, we're changing up the song for the podcast. So I have written a new song and it's called Immaterial. Now, I'm only going to put up the not yet finished version of it, because Chance for Christmas gave me 200 tracks that he made with the guitar to finish the song with. And I simply haven't had the time to go through 200 tracks. So this is going to be kind of the early version of the song. But I hope you like it. I don't know. You probably hate it. It's so funny when you listen to other people's music, right? But anyway, it's the song for 23 people. So if you hate it, tell me and I'll take it off. Anyway, Happy New Year's, my love, and more soon. Hello, lovelies. I am so excited to announce the release of our new film called Heka. Heka looks at the magic of ancient Egypt and how that pertains to the story of ancient Egypt and fills in a whole new perspective that we have been missing collectively for hundreds of years. It features Gordon White, Chance Gardner, Joseph Patrick Farrell, Lon Milo Duquette, Tobias Churton, Graham Hancock, of course, the fabulous John Anthony West, Rupert Sheldrake, Stephen Skinner, Thomas Sheridan, Peter Mark Adams, Thomas Joseph Brown, Aton Veggie, Mog Morton, Bernardo Katstrup, Shauna Home, Mark Passio, John Soraki, and the goddess Joanna Kujawa. I am so incredibly proud of it, and I invite you to come and have a look. You can find a link on magicalegypt.com.
Material.